number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act. Leg it down. Smack them. Jack
them. Oh, night time is the right time. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
If we die, we die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio.
Is now.
Oh, got to be.
This is what we do.
From the Quick and Loan Studios, here's Tony D.
I swear I'm not asking a lot. I swear I am not asking a lot. But for the love of Pete, could the Chicago Cubs or the Toronto Blue Jays make this a series? Either one. I mean, I would be lucky if I could get both of them to cooperate and make these league championship series fun and entertaining. But instead, no. We've got the Mets and the Royals on, forget collision course, that's too cliche. Maybe like a bullet rocketing into the World Series. Watching these two teams, the Cubs and the Blue Jays, try to claw their way back into this stuff is a useless endeavor because it's not going to happen. Toronto Blue Jays that built a lineup that was as formidable as we've seen in a long time cannot get the bats going, and they don't have any pitching. R.A. Dickey, they could have thrown out me and had a better chance, and I can't throw to the pit, to the plate. R.A. Dickey got roughed up, and then it was all downhill from there in the Kansas City Royals 14-2 win over the Blue Jays to capture Game 4. And your lovable Kansas City Royals are now one win away from going back to the World Series. I thought this would be a series where we were going to see the bats of the Blue Jays come through. And it did in Game 3, but I wanted to see that carry over in Game 4. Is that too much to ask? A team that had lost both games to start this series go back to Toronto where the crowd is electric, where a calm and a confident Blue Jays team that we saw in that series against the Texas Rangers after they were down 2-0, won the next three to go on and win that series to move on to the ALCS. Where was that team? Yep, it's about pitching. And when you don't have it and the other team has bats and they're scrappy and they will take advantage of you every which way you can. And oh, by the way, have a leadoff hitter that's batting 600 and is hitting out of his mind. You're going to lose that game. And that's exactly what happened. The Kansas City Royals know how to move base runners. The Kansas City Royals know how to get timely hitting. They are as confident as any team in baseball. I mean, look at what they did yesterday. They fell apart yesterday and yet rallied for four runs to try to make it somewhat of a game in an 11-8 loss. And tonight, they didn't even have to worry about that. Because R.A. Dickey was a mess, and they take advantage. Because if you are a mess on the mound against the Kansas City Royals, you don't need help from your defense. You need help from God, because he's the only one that's going to be able to save you. Because the Royals feast on that like a lion to a wounded animal. You get on that mound, and you can't get it over the plate, or you get on that mound, and you throw pitches right in their zone, they will eat you alive, and no one's going to help you. And that's exactly what they did. They led 5-0 after 2. They destroyed this Blue Jays team. And now are one win away from going back to the World Series. They are punchy. They are fun. They can get good pitching. I mean, heck, Johnny Cueto was terrible yesterday. And yet, they bounce right back. The Blue Jays used a bevy of pitchers, including a position player, for the first time in the postseason. Yikes. They'll have Game 5 to try to wrap this up. Am I asking too much for the Blue Jays to win this one and just extend it? Look, I got no dog in the fight, right? I know you Royals fans are like, hey, man, I just want to get this over with and go to the World Series. And you are totally in your right to do that. But can I just please get a series? Because I'll tell you this, I'm not going to get one in the National League. The Chicago Cubs are one game away from being eliminated from this series in a season in which they have every reason to be proud. They got into this thing. They got the energy and excitement of the city. They went on to beat the St. Louis Cardinals, something I had no idea that they were even capable of doing. And yet, the Mets pitching has been so good, even when it's not good, it's still very good, that they lead 3-0. They shut down that Wrigley crowd. Once the Wrigley crowd calmed down from the Schwarber home run, the Mets were able to get Jacob deGrom going and then, again, take advantage of some bizarre situations to get some runs across and hold on to win the game. The Mets are a better team. They have better hitters. They have better pitching. They're better managed right now. But the Cubs have a very bright future. But again, can I get a series? Can the Cubs at least eke one out in game three to make it somewhat close? Here's how tough of a road this is going to be for the Chicago Cubs. And Joe Maddon even said so. Look, right now the Cubs are down 3-0. So here come the got to take it one game at a time. We got to win one game each, one game win streaks. So we got to do four of those. Yep, you know what? Theo Epstein had seen this before. Right? They were one strike away. The Yankees were one out away from beating the Boston Red Sox, and Dave Roberts stole that base, and the rest is history. So it's been done before, but the reason why the Red Sox comeback in the ALCS of 2004 is so special, the reason why it's so revered, is not because it led to the Red Sox World Series, which it did, is not necessarily because it's against the Yankees, which is even better, but because it's so rare when those things happen, you feel like there is something magical. It propelled the Red Sox to a World Series victory because, my God, if you come back from 3-0 down, not only 3-0 down, look, it wasn't 3-0 down and then they scored 14 runs and were able to win game four and then we'll see what happens. They were one out away from being swept by the New York Yankees and that famous John Sterling line in that game, the voice of the Yankees. The Yankees are one out away from sweeping the Boston Red Sox. Well, those are rare. Those are very, 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 very rare. It's rare in all sports to be down 3-0 and win four straight. That's why when they happen, they're special. So for the Cubs, they're going to have to do something special. I don't know if they've got it because here's the other problem with trying to come back in a series like this. The Mets have already gotten to your two aces, and you're going to have to plow through the rest of theirs if you're going to win this series. You might get to Steven Matz. That's not an issue. Are you going to get through Matt Harvey and Noah Syndergaard again? Are you going to be able to do that? Probably not. The bats need to come alive for the Cubs, and they've got to get pitching. And take advantage from the raucous crowd. Let that feed. Get some momentum going. But it looks like, without question, we're getting the Mets and Royals, and we're going to get it started soon. These two teams are going to be able to cruise in at this rate. Now, I think the Cubs can get a game in desperation, but they're not getting any more than that. And I think the Blue Jays with their bats might be able to come alive and extend this a little bit. But I don't see anything more than that. It's not as if the Cubs and the Blue Jays are playing bad baseball and the Mets and the Royals are just beneficiaries of it. That's not what's happening. The Mets are playing their kind of baseball. They are loose. They know exactly who they are and they're executing it. And the Royals know who they are better than the Mets know who they are. The Royals know exactly what they're doing in this series and it shows. 14-2. What a nice bounce back Kansas City. 800-777-2907. We'll have more on this game coming up. But next, the scandal at Louisville could cost Rick Pitino his job. Why? We'll break that down for you next. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
This is Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Working the third shift.
This is Tony D.
Once again,
from the Quicken Loan Studios, here's Tony D.
Well, the Louisville situation is a real, real mess, and Rick Pitino is going to take the fall for this. I don't know how he survives the information that is coming out on this one. Basically, it's been described as the strip club dorm room for recruits and players of the Louisville Cardinals basketball team that was orchestrated, allegedly, by an assistant coach who brought in girls who danced and did some side stuff. And I don't have to explain what side stuff is to get recruits to go to Louisville. Some kids decided to go to Louisville and some kids decided not to go to Louisville. But the way it all is coming down, and there have been recruits that have confirmed this story, as well as Katrina Powell, who gave her side of the story, which is I had the girls and the girls performed and then performed some more. The question is centering around Rick Pitino. And basically the same question we ask politicians or other people in power whenever there's a scandal in their administration. When did he know? What did he know? And what did he do about it if he did know? And the story right now is that Rick Pitino didn't know anything, so therefore he couldn't act on anything. But now he's calling out to the assistant coach to want to know exactly what the truth was while his dormitory that he wanted built, let me make that clear, that he wanted built was used as strip club, sex club central. Rick Pitino is not going to be able to shake this. This is not an issue that is going to disappear. And Rick Pitino, as long as he wins games, is going to be the head coach at Louisville. This is a far deeper problem. One thing you have to remember, while winning is everything, the other thing that colleges fear is when their reputation overall is being ruined. That's why you'll see university presidents step in and handle these kind of crises. Because it's not about, we're going to let the athletic program run amok, and we're going to let the athletic program do all of this stuff that puts the program in the sewer. And don't worry, when we're winning games and competing for national championships, everyone will forget. No, that's not how this works. Louisville as an institution is being soiled, and it's being soiled badly. And that is not just an athletic department thing. That goes to every department within the school. And therefore, there's got to be somebody within that institution, usually a president or even somebody higher up, that has to step in and act to clean up the mess, to show all of the other alumni that may love the basketball program but love the school more, that the school is not going to fall into this pit of a soiled reputation. And that is why Rick Pitino is not going to survive this. I don't know how he's going to survive this if he does. I really don't. What kind of spin could Louisville possibly put on this pig to get Rick Pitino to save his job? I have no idea what could even be said. And it goes to the heart of the matter of being a head coach. Life isn't fair. And I know I've had jobs where I have been responsible for things that I feel like I should not have been given responsibility for. And yet, if things happen on my watch, those are things I have to account for. I've been a manager at radio stations, and I've had my guys screw up, and I've been a program director, and I've had guys screw up, and inevitably, it comes down on me. You know, I'd get called into the general manager's office and he'd want to know why this program did this or why this Saturday show said that and why he's getting emails about somebody uttering a four-letter word they weren't supposed to that delay didn't catch. And I'm sitting in the office going, what am I supposed to do? Come in on a Saturday and monitor these guys? But it didn't matter. I was in charge. And the buck stopped with me, even if I didn't know. But here's the spin on that. What if I was the kind of manager that did know? What if I was the kind of manager that wouldn't let 1 second of airtime at a radio station I was running go without my approval? What if I was the kind of manager that wouldn't let 1 second of radio time go on the air without me not knowing about it? See, if I had that kind of reputation, if people knew that about me and they said, well, that Tony D, he really is a really tough boss. He, every single second of that radio station is managed by him. He's listening on Saturday nights. He's listening on Sunday mornings. Every single second is being streamed into his phone and he's always on top of things. And the moment we make a half a second mistake, he's on top of it because he wants complete and utter control of this operation. Well, then I have no excuse, right? Even if I wasn't physically there. That's Rick Pitino. The guy I just mentioned, that's Rick Pitino. Rick Pitino has his fingers on every single thing in the Louisville basketball program. And you don't have to take my word for it. That is what's said about him by almost everybody that is in the organization, that has covered the organization or have played for him at various stops, whether it is Kentucky or Providence. They've all said the same thing about Rick Pitino. You really can't go anywhere without him knowing where you are. You try to sneak off to a bad part of town, Rick Pitino knows it. You're failing a test, Rick Pitino knows it. You're hanging around with the wrong group of people, Rick Pitino knows that too. Early days in his career at Kentucky especially, he knew what you ate, when you ate it, how much you were eating it, where you were living, where you were staying, who your friends were, who you were dating. He knew it all. It is implausible. I mean, implausible to have the idea that Rick Pitino was not aware that in the dorm he built, mind you, that a sex party strip club was going on with recruits. Now, again, I don't think Rick Pitino ordered this. There's no evidence that Rick Pitino told his assistant coach to make this happen. And the reason is simple. Most assistant coaches know how the recruiting game is played. And if they feel like this is a place that they have to go, they don't need permission to do this. They'll just do this and ask for forgiveness later. But the other thing that you'll find that goes on in college sports so many times is there is an absence. It's like the president in Area 51, right? There's plausible deniability. Now, I believe in the case of Rick Pitino, it's implausible that he didn't know, but just sake of argument here. You don't tell the head coach this is the kind of stuff you're doing, just like you don't tell the president of the United States that there's aliens in some bunker in Nevada, because if he gets asked about it, then he's forced to lie. You don't put him in that position. So you don't put the head coach in the position. You just run your stripper sex party without his knowledge, quote unquote. Because if you go down for that, that's one thing. If he goes down for it, it's an entirely different thing. And a lot of these guys are loyal to the core. They are loyal to the core. But I just cannot believe, again, the Rick Pitino I know, the Rick Pitino that I have grown up knowing and following, where he was the coach at Providence, or whether he was the coach of the Knicks, or whether he was coach of the Celtics, or at Kentucky, or now Louisville, the Rick Pitino that I have gotten to know through what he is through his players' eyes doesn't seem to match the Rick Pitino I'm being asked to be believed here. Because the Rick Pitino I believe is the man has his fingers and pulse on everything about that Louisville program. And that is the man that if there's a stripper club going on at his dorm, if he doesn't know, then he's not paying attention. And if he does know, then there's another world of problems. So you're either incompetent in following the lives of your recruits and players, or you knew this and tried to cover up something awful that soils the school. Either way, Rick Pitino, you cannot survive this. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on the nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, let's take a look at the Alabama Crimson Tide and the SEC in general, because we've been talking a lot all in conferences and where we stand. It's about midway through the season. Aaron Settles joins us from the Tuscaloosa News and TideSports.com, part of the Rivals Network, as we break down the Crimson Tide. How are you, Aaron?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. All right. So take us back to the game against Ole Miss and that loss and what this team did to not only get back on track, but to get back into national prominence. Did they make any changes or did they just do what they do best?
Well, I don't think they necessarily made any changes. I think they continue to get better on defense. And I think they didn't turn the ball over five times every game like they did against Ole Miss. You know, if you look at that game, and probably to make a good argument, they probably should have lost by three touchdowns, but they kept fighting and clawing and actually only lost by 6 points. So I think they just stopped turning the ball over as much.
Overall, that game against Texas A&M where the defense had three pick six, what makes this defense go? I mean, where do they get pressure? Who has been the name, the star of this defense, or are there many?
There's so many. They're just so good up front in the front seven of their defense. Jaron Reed has been the star of the defense. He He hasn't put up monster numbers, although he's a defensive tackle who's second on the team in tackles. Jonathan Allen leads the team in sacks. They're just so deep along the defensive line. And then Reggie Ragland, the linebacker, who leads the team in tackles, chasing down quarterback sideline to sideline. It's the front seven that definitely makes that defense go.
Where have you seen Jake Coker grow at quarterback? What has he been doing better over the last few games?
Well, I think they've been calling games that suit his strengths. Running the ball first, being a play-action passing team, and then obviously being able to play from a lead and not having to play from behind, I think is big for him. And I think a lot of people forget that. I know he's a fifth-year senior, but this is a guy that hasn't played a lot of football since he was a senior in high school. So just getting into the rhythm of being the guy, being the starter week in and week out. It wasn't until after the Ole Miss game when he actually started getting the majority of reps in practice. So I think this coming with time and a comfortability of being the guy in that offense. And really, I think Lane's done a better job these last couple of weeks of calling game plans that suit what Jake does.
Talk to me about Derrick Henry a little bit, because I know he's such an important part of what the Tide are doing offensively. In terms of where he stands nationally, should he be getting a lot of Heisman consideration? I know Leonard Fournette is still in the conference and he's the bigger name. Should we also be talking about Derrick Henry in that consideration along with Trevon Boykin at TCU and some of the other names around the country?
No, not yet. I don't think. I think right now clearly it's Leonard Fournette and everybody else. As you mentioned, Boykin's really good. Dalvin Cook at FSU has put up pretty similar numbers to Leonard Fournette. I think Derrick is quite content being in the background, and really I don't think it's cliche or any kind of player speak when he actually says that he just doesn't concern himself with that. He got asked about the Heisman this week, in fact, and just completely blew it off, had no interest in even talking about it. I just don't think it's on his radar right now. But if he continues to have games like he did against Texas A&M, then maybe he can get into that conversation, particularly if Alabama wins on Saturday versus Tennessee. They get a bye week, and then coming off a win, if they do win, everyone in the country will be watching Alabama LSU on November 7th. And if Derrick has a big game there in a head-to-head matchup versus Leonard Fournette, then maybe he gets some momentum going behind a Heisman campaign. But I don't see it right now.
Aaron Settles joins us, Tuscaloosa News, TideSports.com on Alabama, who will face Tennessee coming up in Tuscaloosa on Saturday. Aaron, in terms of this rivalry, is it still there with the Tennessee Volunteers? Alabama's won the last eight, and sometimes when that happens, the intensity of the rivalry tends to die with one team winning so often. But is the rivalry still there between the two schools?
Well, yeah, I think so. I think that the older guys that are around the program, the former Letterman guys that come back to the program, they do a pretty good job of teaching the young guys, the new guys, what this rivalry is all about. And certainly on the Tennessee side, it's still there. They're trying to measure themselves against Alabama. And while, it's been a while since Tennessee's won, and a lot of these young guys haven't experienced that loss, I do sense that they get the winner smokes the cigars in the locker room after the game. They know this isn't just a normal SEC game, so it may not be as fresh a rivalry as the Iron Bowl in Auburn or some games like that, but there's still a lot of intensities. I think a lot of people still remember that these are the two winningest programs in the history of the SEC.
Aaron, where do you see the conference right now? Obviously, Georgia has been disappointing, but Florida has sort of been surprising. Other teams have sort of come up, but there are a few teams that are down. Overall, where the preseason expectations were on how good this conference is, as we just got done week seven, where is this conference right now?
I think it's a good conference, but I think it's a little overrated from what I've seen. And in fact, I think, I don't look out across college football this year and see a dominant team. you know, maybe it's Baylor. When Baylor actually plays someone, we'll understand how good they are, maybe have a feel, because they haven't played anybody to this point. I just don't, this year with Ohio State struggling, there isn't that dominant team this year, and there certainly, I don't think, is in the SEC. It could be LSU, it could be Alabama, but I do think it was a little overrated. I think the conference isn't what it was the last couple of years, but it doesn't mean it's a bad conference. It just means it's still just a really, really good conference, maybe, than in terms of where it is now. But, you know, South Carolina is really struggling the way it has. Georgia, you know, losing Nick Chubb, struggling right now. It would help if, you know, if Texas A&M doesn't completely fall apart after that Alabama loss. You know, I think, you know, people aren't really talking about them a lot, but I think Mississippi State is a very solid football team. You know, the Ole Miss losing Memphis certainly hurts, and Auburn, which was the preseason favorite to win the SEC, they haven't had the season that many expected. So, in a lot of aspects, I think it's still a good conference this year, but I do think it's not as good as we maybe made it out to be.
Aaron, I ask this question knowing that pretty much any job in the SEC is a pretty good job. But if I'm a young coach and I want to get a team and I want to build that team to a national championship and I want to get into that Final Four and I want to do it consistently with a good area of recruiting, is South Carolina a good job?
No. The reason I say no, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, is the consistency part. I think you can have success at South Carolina. Certainly, Steve Spurrier proved that. But can you do it consistently? You're going to have to rely on a lot of out-of-state players. You're going to have to go into Georgia. You're going to have to go into Florida. You know, those years when you're in-state guys can produce the Marcus Lattimore, the Jadeveon Clowneys. Yeah, you can be really good. But when that talent dries up and they're not those elite athletes there, year in and year out for your classes, it's going to be very difficult. You can still win at South Carolina. My question is, are the fans of South Carolina going to be content with 8-4? Because, you know, and that's kind of where that program is. And if Seasburg maybe spoiled them a little bit with some 11-win seasons, I don't think, you know, given the competitive nature of the SEC and the way you have to recruit in that conference, but that's a realistic expectation that it's a playoff type of program. At least right now, it's not.
Where are you hearing the rumors or the coaching names that are popping up for that job? And would South Carolina be wise to get a coach that had some ties, whether an assistant coach or a former head coach from the SEC?
Yeah, I think it would be wise. I don't think you need to limit yourself there. I think, you know, if you can get a guy like a Chad Morris type who maybe runs a little more hurry up, no huddle. I think if you're going to be at a school that doesn't produce a lot of top tier talent in your state, you can still do a lot of good things based on the offense that you run. We've seen that with hurry up, no huddle spread attacks. But Chad Morris would be a great hire if you're going to go out of conference. But, you know, if you're wanting to stay in conference, then I think you're going to have to recruit Georgia well. I think that's why Kirby Smart, Alabama defensive coordinator's name, keeps coming up, because he recruits the state of Georgia so well. You know, it's an interesting hire in that it's considered a pretty good job. So you're not going to go out and necessarily hire someone who's never had head coaching experience. That's why I think Kirby Smart's name is so intriguing for that job. But, you know, it depends on which way they want to go. Do you want an up-and-comer who can make a splash offensively, or do you want someone who's proven himself? You know, after the Steve Spurrier hire, they may want to go out and get a proven coach, but that's a little easier said than done.
We saw Will Muschamp go to Florida and have success right away, got him to a Sugar Bowl even though they lost to Louisville, and then the wheels fell off. What you're seeing with the Gators now under Jim McElhain, is that long-term staying power, or is it fresh coach, fresh stuff? We still got to wait and see on the Gators.
Well, I think if he can recruit, which is a big if, and I know it kind of sounds strange given that they're in the state of Florida, but if he can recruit, Jim McElhain can coach. He can call plays. He can develop quarterbacks. This is a guy that won a national championship at Alabama with Greg McElroy as his quarterback. And he was there when A.J. won his first national championship at Alabama in 2011. Jim McElwain can coach. So I don't think it's a flash in the pan, but you're going to have to recruit. You know, that's something that Will Muschamp and his staff did. They recruited well. And those are the players that Mac has this year. I don't think this is a flash in the pan. I think he's a very good coach, and I think he knows how to build a program, and that's what he's doing. My question is, can he recruit with a staff that he has? If he can, then the Gators are here to stay in the SEC East, I think.
Aaron Settles again, Tuscaloosa News, TideSports.com. Back to Alabama real quick. What is the relationship between Nick Saban and Lane Kiffin? Is it a really strong one?
I don't know if I would say strong. I think it's a working relationship. And, you know, if you watch the game against Texas A&M, there was a little interesting moment where Nick Saban tried to call timeout.
Yes.
And Lane Kiffin kind of gave him a stiff arm. So I think when, you know, Saban, Lane Kiffin last year, I think, earned a little bit of latitude with his play calling and how he developed Blake Sims and worked with Amari Cooper. And Nick Saban's giving him a little more latitude than he has his previous offensive coordinators. So I think it's a working relationship, but I don't think they're going out to dinner.
Aaron, great stuff. I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
No problem. Take care.
Aaron Settles again from the Rivals Network at TideSports.com and also Tuscaloosa News, talking some SEC. Listen, I've been saying this for a very long time when it comes to this. The arguments of conferences, my conference is better than your conference, I think is always a little bit misguided. I think it's fun for fans. It's part of what we do. So I'm not gonna put it in the back burner and say it's irrelevant. It's what we do as sports fans. But to look at the SEC now, and to see South Carolina, right, to struggling, to see Georgia struggling like they are, to see Tennessee sort of disappointing, that SEC East is not a good division. It is not a good division. In a very powerful conference, it's still not a good division. South Carolina would struggle to beat teams in any conference in America. Any major conference in America, South Carolina would struggle. Same with Tennessee. Tennessee would struggle against any major team in any major conference. The reason I bring that up is because one of the arguments that has always been made about the SEC is that while we have strong teams, and our strong team could beat your strong team, that wasn't always the crux of the argument. The crux of the argument was always, yeah, but our middle-of-the-road teams, the teams that don't get the kind of attention, the teams that are in the middle of the pack, they could beat your better teams. So Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12, right, ACC. Our middle-of-the-road teams, our Tennessee when they're struggling, or Florida even when they were struggling, could still go to your conference and beat majority of your teams. I don't think that's the case now. I don't. I think that South Carolina would struggle. I think Tennessee would struggle. I think Mississippi State could struggle. There are teams in this division that are in this conference that are excellent. LSU is excellent. Alabama is excellent. I think Florida is excellent. But I don't think further down that you're getting teams that are just struggling in the SEC and wouldn't struggle anywhere else. And that's why the SEC doesn't carry that same punch anymore. South Carolina cannot go to the Big 12 and win it. They can't go to the Big Ten and win it. They can't go to the Pac-12 and win it, and they wouldn't win it in the ACC. And that goes for a lot of teams. Vanderbilt, Kentucky, even though Kentucky's having a good season, they couldn't go on the road and win those games in those other conferences either. 800-777-2907 is the telephone number. We'll continue to talk about the Mets and the Chicago Cubs. How much of trouble are the Cubs in now, down 3-0? And what about the Mets? And should we be looking at them a little bit more differently as we head maybe possibly with a connection with the Kansas City Royals in the World Series? We'll talk about that next. It's Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
This is Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Working the third shift.
This is Tony D.
Once again,
from the Quicken Loans Studios, here's Tony D.
Oh, I like catching up with my favorite conference, the SEC. You know, I have to admit, one of my reasons I love the SEC is SEC fan. I really do. Living amongst them and, you know, kind of, I went to South Carolina. My wife is definitely one. She went to Florida. So I don't have a problem per se is in terms of the braggadocious nature of an SEC fan, but I do like getting under their skin a little bit because, boy, they take that stuff really, really seriously. Now, here's the deal with me and the SEC. I went to South Carolina at a time that they weren't in the SEC yet, and then they got in, and so we were all pretty excited because we thought this was going to be a big deal, and then we realized, God, this is impossible. These are really, really good football teams, and it's derailing any hope that we have of being successful. nevertheless, it's still cool to be part of a conference that has won national championships, garnered so much respect. I just think this year they're down. I think this year, though, is it me or does it feel like the college football in general is not, there's just no dominating team. And I think Aaron hit it on the head when he talked about Baylor. You can make the case about Baylor, but the reality of it is, until they really play somebody, posting 60 on the board every game, when you play a really, really good defense, then we'll see if you've got your bread buttered on the right side here. I don't know if Baylor is that good against really good defensive-oriented teams. But, I've done this dance with Baylor before, but they are really rolling to a point that you have to pay attention to them at least. You know, this was the same argument that we used to make about Oregon all the time. Oregon would be this high-flying team, play really good football, and I'd hear this all the time from my friends below the Mason-Dixon line. Hey, wait till they play an SEC school, because when they play the defense like an Alabama, they ain't going to be able to do that anymore. And sure enough, yeah, LSU would play Oregon and win, you know, and whatnot. But that was the same argument we'd make. But Baylor is a high-flying offense, but you don't have to play an SEC school. You don't have to play a tough defensive team to get into the playoff. Once you get in the playoff, work it out there. Just get in. That's where we're at right now. The style point stuff or the what-if stuff is still just speculation that really doesn't merit anything. I mean, I love playing that game too, right? If, you know, so-and-so plays so-and-so and whatnot. But if Baylor just does its thing in its own conference and nobody else is tough enough in its own conference to beat them, including TCU, then they'll go to the playoff and we'll see from there. That's the way it's going to be. But Alabama, as we were talking to Aaron Suttle about this, Alabama has gone from what's wrong with Alabama? Let's kill the dynasty. You know, it's time. It's over. It might be a good thing for it to be over. All of those conversations, and we went from that to, oh my God, they probably are the best team in college football right now. That's how quick Nick Saban can turn things around. He did it with the win against Georgia. He did it with the win against Arkansas. Now he's did it on the road at Texas A&M. Did you realize Alabama had 3 pick sixes in that game? 3. And one player had 2. A freshman had 2. You couldn't do that against a JV team. Yet they found a way to do it against Texas A&M on the road. But you peel the onions, it's not... The conference isn't as strong as we've seen in years past. We're also talking about Louisville and whether or not Rick Pitino survives the sex scandal. And one of the things that I did not mention earlier tonight, I know that some of you out there hear a story like this. Girls, sex, strippers, recruits, paid for by assistant coaches, allegedly. And I know a lot of you roll your eyes and go, oh, this goes on everywhere. And it does. It does go on everywhere. There isn't a place in this country where a college campus isn't doing something to entice recruits. And some of that is really, really borderline. But there has to be a standard. There has to be a line that you don't cross. You don't take kids in high school who are trying to figure out where they're going to college and supply them with strippers and free sex and just say, well, it's all good. Everybody's doing it. Let's just throw a blind eye to it. Every school should say, everyone's doing it, but we're still punishing for it. Because as much as we know that college football is corrupt and filled with stories like this, somebody does still have to say, hey, can we just be, I don't know, decent in all this? And once we lose that, all of it goes to hell. Yahoo Sports Radio.